fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. We are coming to you live tonight from the Mandalay Bay Event Center, the site of UFC 175. Chris Weidman defending his title against Lyoto Machida. Co-main event by Ronda Rousey defending her champion, her bantamweight championship against Canadian Alexis Davis, who has a chance to become only the third Canadian to ever wear a UFC title. And of course, on Sunday, the Ultimate Fighter finale, BJ Penn dropping down to 145 pounds to take on, I guess, his rival, Frankie Edgar, in hopes to some way, somehow salvage and not go down 0-3 to the answer. There's also a UFC fan expo going on at the Mandalay Bay Center. It's absolutely insane here for us guys here in the media. I'm joined by Jeremy Botter. I'll have Gareth Davies on momentarily. Heidi Fang is with us. Gareth A. Davies, I've just been reminded. Get it right. Yes, sir.
I'm a long way for this show.
I apologize, Gareth. All right, we'll get to you momentarily. He's already trying to steal the show, Jeremy. But first things first, BJ Penn, what are you expecting on Sunday from this gentleman here? Because, you know, he's got to make 145 pounds first on Saturday, but then he's got to step into a guy who's probably going to be, you know, he owned him the first two fights, if you think about it.
He did own him. I guess the magic of BJ Penn for me and for a lot of other people is, like, you never know which guy's going to show up. You know, he did get beat by Frankie twice, but there's always some part of you who look back and we say, man, that guy from 10 years ago could show up. Maybe this is the time it'll happen. And that's, you know, a lot of sports bettors go bad with that because you hope. The reality is he hasn't shown up in a while, but again, it's BJ Penn. You never know. Like, we want to see that guy that comes out and knocks somebody out, the crazy dead person look in their eyes and licks the, you know, the blood off his gloves, and that's the guy we want to see. Are we going to see him again? I don't know. I mean, I hope so. I'm really looking forward to this fight. It's one of my most anticipated fights of the weekend, in a weekend full of really fun fights. I'm looking forward to that one the most, I think.
I want to get to the weekend in a second, but Gareth, are we in a situation or a case here where we're just being simply too nostalgic? When we're looking at a guy like BJ Penn, we're hoping to see the old BJ Penn, you know, almost like a phoenix, rise from the ashes and do what he has to do in the octagon?
Yeah, of course we do, because he's one of the greatest fighters, one of the greatest people ever to be involved in the sport. But unfortunately, you know, since his two Frankie Edgar fights, obviously we saw him back against Matt Hughes, but, you know, he got beaten up by Nick Diaz. He got beaten up by Rory McDonald. He almost went in there. It was almost like he was being sacrificial about himself. It's been a long road back. Because he's done so many special things, because he's been a belt holder in two divisions, we think that he can, as you say, pull the old irons out of the fire. But he is an aging fighter, and he's very persuasive as well. Dana White's admitted this before. Damn, BJ texts me, says I'm in great shape, I've been doing amazing things, I've learned lots of new things. And I fear for him, as Jeremy pointed out, he was shackled twice by Frankie Edgar, pretty much made his name really on those two defeats, and they were shutouts, let's not forget. I don't see anything different at featherweight. In fact, I see it as probably more difficult for him at featherweight. If he does win, though, and pulls off something spectacular, and let's remember that Frankie Edgar goes five rounds so easily, and he has not dropped his level at all, in my view. Great fight with Jose Aldo. If BJ Penn does pull off something unusual, or pulls off a great victory, I do think the reason why they held back from saying Cub Swanson is the next title shot holder is because they're going to see whether the winner of this fight does something spectacular, or the winner of Conor McGregor and Diego Brandão does something spectacular. So maybe, but I don't see it.
Wonderful analysis by Gareth A. Davies. We're joined also by Heidi Fang here from MMA Fight Corner and Fox Sports Vegas. Heidi, like I said, is this a case of nostalgia for us that have been covering the sport for so long with BJ Penn? Gareth is saying there's a potential title shot on the line here if he defeats Frankie Edgar. He still has, I mean, his last fight was at 170 pounds. He is dropping down to 145 pounds. That is insane, if you ask me. What do you expect from BJ Penn on Sunday night?
I expect to see the Gareth had mentioned the champion that we all knew and love, or like Jeremy even said, the guy that licked his gloves in the cage there. And you know, one of my favorite memories of BJ Penn was actually the Cal Uno fight. If you look back to that, and he was talking about the eyes rolling in the back of the head, and you have to wonder if in that warrior spirit that BJ Penn has, if that person still exists in there, if we'll get to see a glimpse of that on Sunday night. But Frankie Edgar also is just always a phenomenal athlete that trains into every single aspect of his opponent when he goes into a fight. So it's going to be a very uphill challenge for BJ Penn. I don't know if it'll be one of those moments where we'll see that greatness, that last glimpse that we hope to see before he steps down.
But the strange part here about BJ Penn for a second, like we're saying about nostalgia and stuff like that, Frankie Edgar's got to go into a fight defeating a guy, or competing versus a fighter he's already defeated twice. Yeah, it's all businesslike for Frankie Edgar, but what's his mindset, do you think, when he steps into the octagon on Sunday?
Well, I really hope it isn't one of overconfidence. I hope that he's not overlooking BJ Penn for the mere fact that he has beaten him twice, and I hope that he still considers him as, if not an equal opponent, that somebody who's accomplished more, that's done more in their career, that it's also somebody that he would have to really see some adversity against to get in there and make it a really competitive fight. I don't think, though, that Frankie ever has that kind of mindset where he's going to look past anybody because he's the person that he is. But, you know, once you have had those couple of wins that have been pretty one-sided over the same competitor, you have to wonder, what is his mindset? Does he think that it'll be just somebody he can blow right past?
Well, the real question is, what's Gareth A. Davies' mindset right now? Because I think you're trying to open up a salad in the middle of a radio show. We're trying to do a radio show here, Gareth.
Listen, I've been through a bowl of bulgur wheat since we started, and now I'm trying to open my kale salad. It's what you've got to do when you're in my kind of shape these days, you know. I'm getting that. What I would like to say is this. BJ Penn, what's relevant this weekend? Remember, he fought Lyoto Machida at light heavyweight as well, yeah? This is how extraordinary this man is. He weighed in at 191 pounds for that fight, with Lyoto, who's sitting across from us, or was just a moment ago, 225 pounds. This is a man who would fight Brock Lesnar. No, he is. I mean, you know, you laugh, but he really would.
He wanted to become the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted to become... He is a 6'6", 250-pound man when he walks around. That is how he sees himself. He's also, remember, let's not forget this about him, and there's very few men who can do this, let alone women. He can stand on one leg and wrap the other leg around his head. Now, if you can do that, you will always be a legend.
As disturbing as always, Gareth A. Davies. Now, Jeremy Botter, in all seriousness, you're Frankie Edgar for a moment. You know it's business. Your goal is to continue to win, get close to Jose Aldo again, and perhaps Chad Mendes. We'll talk about that perhaps later on. At the same time, you've already defeated BJ Penn. You really have nothing to lose, but in a way you do, especially when it comes to ranking, because Gareth kind of made a good point there. BJ wins this fight, he could be knocking on Jose Aldo's door.
Yeah, Gareth doesn't make many good points, and that, but that was a good one. I'll give him that.
The point later on is going to be on your chin, brother.
I don't think you can say foot. That. I don't think you can say that on the radio. Yeah, I mean,
well, he did say his foot.
He did say
foot to chin.
I'm horrified now.
Chewing my shoe later on.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you think about BJ and the horrible past few. Not horrible, but you know, his past few years, and there haven't been many wins, and yeah, one win. Guy could be a tie, especially in the UFC. Like, if you're a name, especially at a division like featherweight, like bantamweight, flyweight, if you're a name, you're going to get there. Your road to that title shot is going to be a whole lot easier than others. BJ Penn has a momentous opportunity. This is a big opportunity because if he wins, I do believe he'll get a title shot, even if it is against Aldo, who's kind of a teammate now of his. But I think
the
he is.
Like,
yeah, the Nova, and I think. He would get a title shot if he does win. Do I think he's going to win? No, but I mean, would I like to see him against Jose Aldo? Hey, the hardcore MMA fan in me would like to see that fight.
Yeah, I wasn't listening to Jeremy at all then. So, but I thought I'm sure he made a good point because I was too busy flirting with Heidi. But it's a no-brainer for the UFC. Stop it, Heidi! Don't look at me like that. I know, but it's awful. You know, I mean, Heidi. The thing is. It makes absolute sense if BJ Penn does look good that they would give him the title shot because it's the chance for a last hurrah. The UFC, he's a company man, isn't he, BJ Penn?
Is now.
Yeah, but Dana White loves the guy.
Yes.
And that goes a long way. We know how it works. It would be the swan song for him. So that's what he'll have in his mind. He could become
the first
man to win three titles in three divisions. That is a big thing.
So now hold that thought, Heidi, and I'll tell you why. BJ Penn knows the opportunity that could be before him right now. He's also got to be thinking, if I lose this fight, this is the end for me. So he's got this situation where he could catapult himself into a title shot, or the rug could be pulled from underneath him, and it's all over. If you're BJ Penn, how do you deal with all that?
It's really tough to bring that kind of mindset and pressure on yourself into a fight, but I think being who he is, he already is looking at it like he knows he has to win. It's a must-win situation, and there is a lot of pressure mounting because you've heard Dana White speak about it this week and say that if, in fact, he were to lose, he would ask him to step down and he would ask him to retire, and I don't think BJ's ready for that. I think that he definitely has other people aside from Frankie that he wants to come out that maybe is on that list of those who he wants to avenge losses against, or even maybe just people in the featherweight division that he's willing to go after and fight. Maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe he wants to go back to welterweight and try to get a rematch against Rory. I don't know why he would, but perhaps it's there. I'm just saying that I think that he still has some goals out there to accomplish that he wants to get after, and that he's still hungry. I don't think that he's ready to hang up his gloves.
Well, the one guy BJ Penn wants no matter what is George St. Pierre, and I know that for a fact, talking to both guys on numerous occasions. The one thing Jason Perillo, BJ's boxing coach, has maintained over the years, and if you notice, he's never or rarely in the corner of a BJ Penn fight whenever BJ competes over 155 pounds. You don't see him at 170 pounds. You don't see Jason Perillo there. Now we're talking about something that Jason's always wanted. He likes BJ at the lightweight 155. Now he's at 145. You got to think Jason Perillo is super excited for this, or is it a situation, listen, I'm going to watch everything you do for this training camp to make sure you're not killing yourself cutting weight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the most interesting things about this fight, isn't it? Is the fact that BJ Penn, who's had, now I wouldn't say difficulty making one, but he hated life. He hated life. He hated doing the weight cut. He hated eating right. Like, and suddenly this guy's going to make 145 pounds. Like, I'm fascinated to see not only if it's going to happen, but how easy it happens for BJ Penn, because I think that's a key as to his mindset. If he comes in and he makes it easy, steps up there 145, you know, 146, no problems whatsoever, then we know BJ Penn took this seriously. If he didn't, if he looks like death, if he needs help walking up the scale like we've seen before, then we know he probably maybe didn't take it as seriously as he let all of us think he did.
There's also the case of, A, did he take it seriously, or B, you look at a guy like Kenny Florian, who was always in great shape, but he had miserable weight cut at 145. These guys that are going up and down, up and down. And one thing George St. Pierre has always said, I will never replicate the career of Roy Jones Jr. You will never see me fluctuate between weight divisions, because you saw what happened. You're a boxing guy, Gareth. You saw what happened to Roy Jones Jr. Is that too much on BJ Penn's body to go up and down, up and down, up and down, now all the way down to where he's never been before at this age?
One of the things about Roy Jones Jr. was once he went up to heavyweight to fight John Ruiz, you know, he was an extraordinary from middleweight on upwards to light heavyweight. At light heavyweight, he was literally untouchable. When he went to heavyweight and he muscled up, however he did it, it's a long time ago now, he was never the same again afterwards. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to wonder now. I'm wondering whether BJ Penn, having fought from heavyweight down to featherweight, has anyone else ever done that? Maybe Akihiro Gono might have done it, you know? It might
be.
He's been up. He's fought heavyweights.
Shogun or something, yeah.
Exactly. Look, he does have a weird body type. In fact, there's a few weird body types sitting around this table. I'm not including you in that, Heidi, by the way. But particularly Jeremy Botter. Get off your phone, Jeremy. We're on a radio show.
He's doing research. He's doing research.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
Or tweeting.
No, I. The key for me is that in this, and I think you all make really valid points genuinely about the move to featherweight, is that he pushed. I mean, the news was that he was pushing very hard during this series to have the fight at lightweight, and accepted it because it was a way back in, wasn't it? He's been out for a long time, let's not forget. And the weight cut is the key to victory in this fight for me, because I think it will be very tough for him. I hope he does make weight, because obviously it's heinous when a fighter doesn't, and I'd hate him to have that tarnish this contest for him.
Well, we have Mike Chipeta walking around here. We might as well get Mike Chipeta to sit down as well to get his thoughts on this. Mike, obviously we were talking about BJ Penn. I think Jeremy, thank you very much for your time. I know you got stuff to do. Thank you very much. Mike, we're talking about BJ Penn at the moment. We haven't even touched on UFC 175 yet. We're stuck on BJ Penn. We're going through a nostalgia situation.
More than one event this week?
Yeah, we're going to get to the whole fact that... So we're feeling almost nostalgic. We want BJ Penn to come out the way he used to come out. We're looking back on these old days. Frankie Edgar's defeated him twice. You know, according to Gareth, he shackled him. He owned him. He, you know, Heidi said it was, you know, it was, they were dominant performances. There's a lot of weight to be cut here. Jason Perillo likes him at a much lighter weight. We're trying to figure out which BJ Penn will show up. And Gareth made a fantastic point. If BJ Penn emerges victorious, we could be talking title shot versus Jose Aldo in the very near future. I mean, what's your take on this whole BJ Penn this weekend?
Well, first of all, I have no doubts or concerns about him making weight. I was told that he was 150 on, was it Monday or Tuesday?
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't think he's going to have any problem whatsoever making the weight. It just goes to show, I mean, when he really puts his mind to something, has good people around him as he's had in this camp, he's capable of great things. Now, is he going to be able to turn back the clock with his performance? That's a whole other question. You know, as we see with a lot of fighters, as they sort of go on in their career and the damage starts accumulating, sometimes they have a little problem kind of pulling the trigger. And we've kind of seen that a little bit. Now, part of that is because he's been always facing bigger guys like Roy McDonald, who's throwing out that jab. He has a problem, you know, finding a way inside. He doesn't have that problem against Frankie. With Frankie, it's speed. And is he suddenly going to get faster, BJ? He might be a little bit faster at 145, but you also have to factor in the age in there. So it's really difficult to see that all of a sudden he's going to make up that speed on Frankie. Because Frankie's at 145 too now. You know, they fought at 155 before. I just can't see him suddenly making up the difference. I know he's incredibly motivated. And
that's scary.
And I always say, all the great fighters have one moment of turning back the clock at the end of their careers. Is this it for BJ Penn? Who knows?
Great statement. I got goosebumps thinking about that. Gareth, I'm about to ask you a question as you fill yourself up with all kinds of that kale salad. Oh, Mike, you joked about the fact that, oh, wait a second, there's another fight this weekend? What we're all trying to come to grips with, and something Gareth has actually told me beforehand, that he's experienced something like this before, where back-to-back events. Now, he's probably got crazier stories. Hopefully there's kids that might get some earmuffs on right now, but at the same time, Gareth, keep it clean. You talk to us about the fact that you have covered a situation like this before, back-to-back events, where, you know, I mean, Mike, myself, Jeremy, Heidi, we're all freaking out thinking this is a lot of work right now, and it's just a matter of how do you do. I mean, we have the best job on the planet, don't get me wrong. But this is going to be a lot. There's a pay-per-view on Saturday. There's a UFC Fan Expo Saturday, Sunday. The Ultimate Fighter finale on Sunday. It's nonstop for us, but you've been through this before.
I did. Back in, I think it was 98, 99, I covered a Nassim Mohammed boxing match in Detroit. He was defending the world title. And then I came to Vegas the next day. It was a Friday night fight. And Vegas the next day for a Mike Tyson fight. Whatever date it was, he fought all in Norris. So I had flown from the UK. I'd been partying hard. It was back in the day.
Your youth days.
Yeah, pretty much. But we started partying on a Wednesday normally in those days, and we finished on a Sunday night. We went out all night, took a few Red Bulls in the morning, and we went to work. It was normal. We used to have four-hour lunch breaks to drink in those days. It was proper journalism. And it's all gone by the wayside. This new digital age has ruined drinking for journalists. But we got to Detroit, covered the Nassim Mohammed fight. You know what it's like. You go to the post-fight press conference, you filed your piece, you've got to file another piece afterwards, like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. I had to go straight to the airport. I came across America. I was literally into the Tyson fight by the mid-afternoon. For some reason, I didn't have any sleep. By the time I'd finished the Tyson fight at 2 in the morning on the Sunday morning, I think I'd had no sleep for about 70 hours at that point. And it was just so busy, but it was brilliant. All in Norris retired after the first round. He got hit quite a lot around the head, but he had a bad knee at the end of the first round. Didn't want to come out for the second. I've never known a punch to the head affecting your knee and your heart at the same time, but it did that night. And so I went back to my room to file two pieces, sat on the bed and woke up with about an hour to go to write two long pieces. It was 6 o'clock in the afternoon by then in the UK, and 9 missed calls from my wife. Apparently she'd rung the room as well, and I'd been screaming at her, leave me alone. I don't even remember the calls. The phone was off the hook. And that's what happens. It is exhausting. And this week, not only that, if you go and look at all the events that are happening this week, it's like looking at a massive menu and you want to eat everything on it.
You can't.
And you can't. And this might sound strange to fans, but we actually have to save a little bit. We have to do our weight cut for the Saturday night as well. I mean, you know, there's some pretty good shapes, some weird shapes around this table, actually, not including you, Heidi. But the thing is, you've got to save a little bit of yourself for Saturday night. I mean, there are so many extraordinary events going on this week. What I've never experienced before is back-to-back events and so much promotion of so many different things and so many athletes going outside their fields to go bowling. I went to a fantastic art exhibition last night.
Yep.
The Art of Fighting. It's at 1217 South Main Street. It's fantastic. It's a great part of town. It's a hipster part of town now, that bit going down to the old town. There's so many events going on, and I think it feels like overkill to us, but for the fans, it's manna from heaven. It's brilliant to be involved in this. It feels like the World Cup of MMA is going on right now here this week.
Well, I think that's the whole deal, Heidi. When Dana White and UFC and the Fertitta brothers put this on, it's UFC Fight Week, but it is like the World Cup. It's a perfect time if you think about it with the World Cup going on right now. But it's a lot, like Gareth said, there's so many things and so many events, we simply cannot get to them all as media folk, and we want to. It's just, it's extremely difficult. I mean, what are your plans over the next, we're only here, it's actually Thursday, but if you think about it, there's so much stuff to do.
For those people who actually have followed me or know about me, I am a workhorse. I never get out and see sunlight, although I'm naturally brown. I would really love to get to a pool party for a change and enjoy some of it. And you know what I've noticed about this?
The UFC is putting on a pool party, but yeah, there's other stuff going on at that time.
Right, absolutely. We have weigh-ins. We have all these media days. We've got to talk to the fighters because that's our job. And, you know, I don't mind that at all. But, you know, maybe one of these 4th of Julys I can actually get out and hopefully enjoy something. I am actually somewhat looking forward to the free concert because I think that would be a blast. Why not get out there and be under old downtown Las Vegas and see some fireworks?
That's the whole thing. We are going to get some downtime, but the downtime itself is basically the UFC's downtime. They're telling us where to go, sort of. Not telling us where to go, but here's a couple of options for you guys. And it's going to be, like I've been saying, a crazy week. We got about 30 seconds, Heidi. You know, we're in the midst of a room right now. Stefan Struve is here. Uriah Hall is here. It is the who's who. There's going to be, what, 250 fighters here, managers, who's who. I think the old school guys, Ken Shamrock, Pat Miletich is going to be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. I mean, it is an absolutely exceptional weekend put on by the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
It really, truly is, and it's not often that we get to really bask in all of this and have, like you said, so many different fighters at our just disposal and just so accessible. And, you know, the thing that I love about this sport and covering it is that they are all very unique people and obviously very... they want this kind of coverage. They want people to talk to them. It's not like when you go into the NFL or something and they're not as interested in talking to you. And they've heard the same question 100 times. I mean, imagine poor Johnny Manziel. But, you know, the sport, everybody here is just great and pleasure to work with, like family, basically. And I enjoy very much being able to do this.
And it is family. It's for us in the media, it is a traveling circus when you come cover an Ultimate Fighting Championship event. For example, we are sitting in a room right now. As I mentioned, Uriah Hall just came in. Mike Chipetta jumped up to be the first one to interview Uriah. Stefan Struve's in here. I think Matt Mitrione is going to be coming down. It's a who's who of people that are competing over the weekend. And there's so many others. Their cornermen are walking around. We saw Lyoto Machida, as Gareth mentioned earlier. So much more to come to you from the Mandalay Bay Event Center, the site of UFC 175. We haven't even talked about Machida versus Weidman. We haven't talked about Ronda Rousey and Alexis Davis. We'll get to that momentarily. So much more right here on UFC Central. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're coming to you live tonight from the Mandalay Bay Event Center in beautiful and scorching Las Vegas, Nevada, 43 degrees Celsius for you Canadians back home. It is absolutely fantastic, unlike it is in Toronto, where at 30 degrees Celsius with that humidity, you walk outside, you're instantly sweating. Here, you're just absolutely getting cooked, but it is what it is. I am not complaining. I love coming to this city as many times as I do a year. We are talking about UFC Fight Week here. UFC 175 on Saturday night at the Mandalay Bay Event Center with Chris Weidman defending his title against Lyoto Machida. We got Ronda Rousey defending her title against Alexis Davis. We just went extensively with BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar. They are the main event for the Ultimate Fighter finale on Sunday. We talked about the whole situation about the UFC Fan Expo, but my producer, Joe Cervenka, sort of wants to chime in on something specific that even I sort of forgot because there's so much content that we sort of turn over on UFC Central, the television side. You thought of something that was kind of candid that we basically forgot about when all the media guys were here.
Well, as a producer, I have the privy of going through hour and hour after tape and interview, and a lot of the fighters that we interviewed for predictions, we do this for most main events, a lot of fights, a lot of guys were going with BJ Penn, Travis Brown, Diego Sanchez, a lot of guys, Donald Cerrone, a lot of guys were just couldn't wait to see BJ Penn at 145 pounds, and the term, the description in common, an animal. That's what these guys are expecting to see, 145 pounds. BJ Penn, a lot of people have been talking about his last couple of performances at 170. I think everyone agrees that was not the weight class he should really be at. 145 pounds, he might be a little faster, not as fast as Frankie Edgar, but I think what people are missing a little bit here is he still has that power somewhere. And I believe Gareth or someone mentioned it earlier, every time a fighter in their career, the twilight of the years, has that one turn back.
Mike Chappetta mentioned it for sure, you're right.
Turn back the clock moment. And maybe, just maybe, with the title shot, Gareth mentioned it possibly in the balance, this is maybe BJ Penn's moment.
This is absolutely huge, but we want to close off this. You have one more thing to say about BJ Penn before we move on? Go ahead.
The one thing I would say is that the reason why all those fighters back him is that BJ Penn is a fighter's fighter. He will always be a warrior, and at the risk of upsetting everyone in Canada with this next comment, you are only our scruffy cousins, remember, and you will always be that. But I love coming to Canada. I love you very much. BJ Penn will always be a warrior. George St. Pierre will always be a mixed martial artiste. And that is what he is, and there's a difference between that. And when the chips go down, even though George St. Pierre will always be a legend and a great mixed martial artist, he will always be remembered like that. He is, and he is a legend. He's a brilliant man. BJ Penn is an original warrior. He's a warrior. You would follow him out of a trench in a war. You would go with BJ Penn because you know that he would take a bullet in front of you. That is why the fighters think he will win. That's the danger for him as well. I love the guy. He's always got time for everyone. But I just think his great, you know, comeback fight was, I don't know, Matt Hughes or that, and that's it really. And Frankie's not, Frankie to me, I've seen him walking around a few minutes ago. You're talking about, it's a who's who everywhere. When I picked up my kale cranberry and goat's cheese salad that I'm still trying to get through in little munches while you talk, he looks in fantastic shape, yep. You know? And I just think, unfortunately, that Frankie will probably just have a little bit too much for BJ.
All right, let's move forward here. The pay-per-view is on Saturday, and it's Chris Weidman taking on Lyoto Machida. There's a sentiment out there in the mixed martial arts world that they're still not sold on Chris Weidman because the first fight with Anderson Silva was Anderson Silva clowning around. The second fight with Anderson Silva, Anderson Silva's shin shattered. So people are thinking, well, I don't know about Chris Weidman, forgetting the fact that he dominated Anderson Silva in those fights. That's not to say when Chael Sonnen dominated Anderson Silva, Anderson Silva came back. You just never know. But people out there are still coming at me, Gareth, and saying, I'm not sold yet on Chris Weidman.
Listen, they're always coming at you and you love it. And you're great and you're great at it. It's what you're the greatest counter striker in the media. Look, I don't agree on one of your points there. I don't think that first Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman fight. I think Chris Weidman was just about to fall apart in that fight. And that is my view.
That's not me saying it. That's what I'm getting.
I Chris Weidman was talking back in there and moving his arms around, and that was what he was not meant to do. I spoke to Ray Longo about this today. Sorry for banging the desk. And I reminded Ray that he had to keep saying to Chris, you punch through his chest, you keep punching. Yeah. That's what got him the knockout. 1-2, 1-2, walk him down, walk him down. Take no notice. And as John Danaher revealed after their preparation. They had people doing all kinds of things in front of his eyes, doing weird stuff just to try and confuse him in sparring. Yes, I do think the jury's still out, but the second time that Anderson Silva stepped into the octagon with Chris Weidman when Chris was the champion, for me, he looked like the champion. Anderson Silva looked brittle that night. I feared for him even before his left leg snapped in half in the second round. I saw him in a lot of pain with one of his feet at the end of the first round. It took him a long time to get up. I was sitting looking right into his face, and it wasn't shown on the cameras that night, and I'm convinced he might have damaged the leg even before that second round.
Well, that's what Chris said. Chris said that he heard a crack in the first.
I am convinced he did. I have always felt this. It was instinctive at the time. You know how we tune in for these fights. This is why we're good at it, but this is why we love it, because we also tune in very highly to these moments. I've always put my pen down and my fingers away from my keyboard when the likes of Anderson Silva fight, the people like Floyd Mayweather fight, because I want to watch them live. I get one chance to watch it live. And if you're, because people see us looking up and down when we're writing and so on, you don't want to miss those moments. The jury is still out on Chris Weidman, because you need to look at his record. Compare it to Lyoto Machida's record. Chris Weidman has still not, he's fought one of the guys who's standing to my left about 10 meters away, Uriah Hall. He had a great fight against him. Came in on 2 weeks' notice with a cracked rib and I think submitted him. I can't remember. I think he submitted him. But the thing is about Chris Weidman, he doesn't yet have the record to show that he is elite. Yes, he's the champion, and I don't mean it in any insulting way. Yes, he's already the champion, but he needs to go on a run. This will cement the fact, if he beats Lyoto Machida, this will cement the fact that he belongs at elite level. And from there, he can build a legacy.
It's strange because, you beat Lyoto Machida. Oh, okay, now you're the champion. But you want to make a point on something?
Well, I was saying back to we were talking about the leg check, the kick check, and his camp maintains that was part of the game plan. That was by design. Yep. That wasn't a defensive leg check. That was an offensive leg check. He said he was driving his knee in towards Anderson Silva. So if that was going on for a round beforehand, catching it at the right time in the second round, so why is it a fluke? If that's part of the design, it happened that it went down that way. Impressive.
But it wasn't fluke, because if you look at the documentary they've just put out, which was brilliant, on Chris Weidman, by the way, he was saying he left that first fight and he could barely walk because he'd taken so many leg kicks. And what it was if they felt this fight was going to go any longer, he didn't want to take damage to the legs. But I think it's more testament to how powerful he has got. Really powerful. He's a large boned man, isn't he? And he is a beast. And you know what? What I like about Chris as well, you're similar build to Chris. You're a big man. No, he's not a big, but he's a big man.
You should note that he's referring to Joe Cervenka, not yours truly.
Yeah, exactly. But I've heard you're a big man as well.
All right, well, let's move forward.
Yeah. Anyway.
We saw Chris today, yesterday at open workouts, and he looked amazing. And he looks just like a powerful, strong, put-together guy, and athletic and fast. And that's why, I mean, I'm not sold on him, because his record is a lot shorter than a guy like Lyoto Machida. But he ran through everyone he got to get there. And he fought the greatest of all time twice. Sure, the wins are somewhat in odd fashion, but you know what else? Now we're saying he has to beat Lyoto Machida to be there. He's beaten the greatest of all time twice, regardless.
No, I'm not saying he's not the champion. What I'm saying is the body of work that we create, yes, is what defines us. Not obviously right now. Listen, he's 28 or whatever he is. I'm nearly 50. It's not till you get older do you realize it's the things you do over a long period of time that really count. And what I like about Chris Weidman is he's got to be the champion. What I like about him, like you say, he's not just solid physically. And we know that he's got amazing self-belief. He's really solid mentally. And he gives nothing away. I like the way he deals with the media. I watched him playing table tennis in Toronto. Yeah. Do you remember that night?
Yep.
And won't lose at table. He said he wouldn't lose at rowing. He wouldn't lose at anything he was doing for the first time. He's that kind of mindset. He wouldn't lose at tiddlywinks with John Morgan.
John Morgan is actually walking behind us. Before we get to the other point, Joe, one of the things I want to mention that Joe mentioned, or Mr. Cervenka mentioned, that when Chris Weidman was defending those strikes from Anderson Silva, one of the things that Ray Longo likes to use and teach is from the old Jeet Kune Do days, which is the Bruce Lee style, destructions, and destructions basically mean anything above the waist, you block with the point of the elbow. Anything below the waist, you block with the point of the knee. Hence the reason why they were so driven and moving forward every time Anderson Silva would throw something. You want to make something, another point there?
Well, Gareth was just saying how Chris is not only physically strong, but mentally strong and grounded. We just did a one of our Getting to Know segments with Chris, and what a down-to-earth, cool, Long Island, chill dude. You know, he drives a minivan, I believe. White minivan. He's a family man. He's a very down-to-earth guy. I think he has his circle of friends and family very close to him, and I think that keeps him grounded, and I think that keeps him very motivated. And I think that sometimes is the difference for a fighter that has that kind of branched-out family and support group. They can get through the tough things that a fighter has to go through on a daily basis to be at that elite level.
New York State, you are absolutely silly. You have the middleweight champion in the world in your presence, and yet you will not sanction and regulate mixed martial arts. One of the things that we talked about leading up, especially on the UFC Central Television side, about Chris Weidman, about Lyoto Machida, and I also spoke with Ray Longo. Now, I am not at liberty to say it was an off-the-record conversation with Ray Longo. You were there. Gareth actually came in and did an on-the-record conversation with Ray Longo. And the strategy, Joe, that I had mentioned on the show and leading up, The prediction I had for what Chris Weidman was going to do, Ray said I was about 90% correct. I missed 10%. I can't get into what 10% is, but it's more of a mind thing, and we know how strong Chris Weidman is. Now, you spoke to Ray Longo, like I said, and for those that don't know, if you watch the media workouts, Chris Weidman was not hitting any pads, and Ray Longo is the one that holds those pads. Ray Longo is unable to hold pads. That's all I'm going to say right now. That's the power of Chris Weidman.
Look, one of the things I felt was very important in this fight is that Lyoto Machida has this ability. In a way, right now you could kind of classify him as a tighter version of Anderson Silva. Do you know what I mean? And in many ways, that's why people think it's a very tough test for Chris Weidman. But if you ignore the aura around Lyoto Machida and the fact that he circles and he moves a lot and he springs in and out and he's very lateral when he moves and then he creates unusual angles and fights in bursts. I've got this feeling that they'll be instructing Weidman to walk him down and then change angle on him and just try and walk through him because he doesn't have a lot of head movement. That's what you can't forget with Lyoto. You get to him. People say, oh, yeah, Chris needs to take him to the ground. No. Lyoto doesn't have a lot of head movement. He has back motion, but he doesn't move neck and head. Good movement of the microphone there because I'm moving my head and neck. I think it wouldn't surprise me to see Weidman knock Machida out in this fight. I don't think he'll have any respect for that circling, that beautiful movement that Lyoto just does. And I think he'll walk through that magic cloud and try and put one on him.
We're now joined also by John Morgan from MMA Junkie and USA Today. John, we talked at length in the beginning about BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar. We're now on to the Lyoto Machida, Chris Weidman fight. I am of the opinion that I think Chris Weidman will try and walk through whatever Lyoto Machida does, whether he's countering or not. I believe he does want this fight on the ground. Why bother standing up? Gareth disagrees. He thinks there'll be a knockout there. What are your thoughts? What are you expecting from Chris Weidman, who on Wednesday looked like a beast?
Yeah, he does look like an absolute beast. Listen, I think, obviously, he's going to want to get this fight to the ground. I mean, I do think that he's shown that he's capable of handling himself in the stand-up department. But I still contend that the fight, the punch that he knocked out Anderson Silva with, he shouldn't have thrown. That is the type of punch, you know, if you think about how overextended he was, how far he was reaching to throw that punch, that is a punch that you typically would get knocked out from by Anderson Silva or Lyoto Machida. So I don't want to say it was a lucky punch. That's silly. You know, you throw a punch with an intent of knocking somebody out, you knock him out. But I still technically would say that if somebody was breaking down that fight, they'd probably say, bro, don't throw that. Don't reach out that far. And fortunately, it just landed. So, listen, I do think that certainly he has the capability of knocking him out. But I do think that if he extends himself like that, Lyoto Machida is going to make him pay. I love this fight. I'm telling you, I think I'm more pumped up about this fight than I have been about most others lately because, man, it is such a chess match. And as you break it down, it's, gosh, you know, you convince yourself one way and then you end up convincing yourself the other way. I think this is a fantastic fight.
And also, it's one of those ones that when it ends, you go, why didn't I see that? Because you should have seen it all along. Like, no, but it's a bit like, but if we were saying earlier, John, that one of the reasons why the jury has to still be out in a way against Chris is that you look at the record of Lyoto Machida and you look at the record of Chris, he's not yet an elite champion because of his record, you know.
I would agree with that.
Just one second. The reason why he brought that up was the fact that I was getting, the Twitter world, how it works, stuff like that. Even fans coming out to me saying, well, you know, Chris Weidman, the first time against Anderson Silva was a lucky punch. Oh, the second time Anderson Silva's leg shattered. It's like Chris Weidman is getting no respect whatsoever. He has to beat Lyoto Machida to be considered the true middleweight champion. That's what we're talking about before.
I agree with that. I completely agree with that. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong to say that. Here's what the way I've been framing it is, I am convinced that Chris Weidman was absolutely the right guy to beat Anderson Silva. I'm still not convinced he's the absolute best middleweight in the world, you know, and I think that's what he's got to frame right there, you know, is that if he wins this fight, you know, it kind of sucks for him that he said you have to legitimize it, because it is weird that both those fights ended the way they did, but at the same time, I did think in both fights Anderson was kind of starting to settle in. You're like, uh-oh, Anderson's getting his rhythm. Yes, he's starting to move a little bit, and he's getting the rhythm right when they ended abruptly, but at the same time, you can't take away those wins from Chris Weidman. He looked fantastic in both of them.
But the other thing as well is you're still, the legacy of Anderson Silva still hangs there over the division, because we're only in 2014 now. It was only last year that he lost the title, and he was the champion for 7 years, 16 fights unbeaten in the UFC. And not only that, the highlight reel knockouts that will stay in the highlight reel knockouts of knockouts, the Belfort fight, the Forrest dismantling, the way he toyed with Bonner, the way he toyed with Damian Maia, maybe brought the sport into disrepute that day. That's what I felt against Damian Maia in Abu Dhabi. But the things he has done in the octagon, you cannot. I said I don't tap when he's fighting. I don't write anything down, because you only get one chance to see it live. And Anderson Silva, whatever he did, he had an X factor, an enigma about him, that an enigmatic quality that we thrive off. It's what wakes us up in the morning. And so he's still there in many ways, Anderson, isn't he? I don't think he'll ever hold a title again. In some work, and I'm, for better or for worse, I'm still comparing Chris to that man. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. In terms of being a champion. And I can't get away from it.
Heidi Fang, Walker. This is a revolving roundtable here at the Mandalay Bay Event Center. It's unbelievable here. Gareth Davies and Heidi Fang are having their own little situation right now. We do not have much time left, John Morgan. We haven't even touched on Ronda Rousey and Alexis Davis. Obviously, as a Canadian, Alexis Davis, can she become the third Canadian to wear a championship belt under the Ultimate Fighting Championship banner? Many of us, you know, we're kind of squinting and saying, oh, don't really like your chances, although anything can happen. Ronda Rousey looks like something else right now. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Ronda Rousey's just a cut above everybody else. You know, the Canadian audience will certainly be pulling for the Canadian. But listen, I do think that she is one of the most well-rounded athletes that Ronda has fought. I do think that her durability is credible. But to me, just the speed and the explosiveness, I just think there's such a major difference between those two in terms of that athleticism that I don't think it's going to be pretty.
We're going to get to Gareth in one second. He's kind of waving. He's not done a salad
Gareth
yet.
Wants to talk?
Yeah, shocker. Before we get to Gareth's thoughts on that fight, the co-main event there, real quick, Gareth made up a good point. If BJ Penn defeats Frankie Edgar on Sunday,
in a good way,
there could be a title shot in his future, even though he's with the whole Novi Unial camp. Yeah or nay?
No, I think he'd be jumping the line. I think that would be wrong to be done. I mean, I get it. It's BJ Penn. It's the prodigy. He's a legend. But I just don't think that would be fair to everybody else involved. I mean, is it out of the realm of possibility? No. I mean, the UFC can make any fight they want to, but I just think it would be a shame.
All right, Gareth, Ronda Rousey, Alexis Davis. Alexis Davis has the opportunity to become the third ever champion from Canada to wear a title. Not many people are giving her much credit. Ronda Rousey looks absolutely fantastic. Your take real quick on that bout.
Look, Ronda Rousey looks so good at the moment, I would be prepared to father children with her. That's the first thing. The second thing is... The second thing is... No, we're very good friends, don't worry. The second thing is, one thing in this fight, and we saw it today in the fighter workouts, or yesterday as it was when the show goes out. Speed. I believe that Alexis Davis is so tough, comes forward, takes a shot, takes two to give one. The problem in this one, Ronda Rousey's speed in the stand-up is now extraordinary. Speed will win this fight. She won't beat her, I'm afraid.
Allow me to address that very, very quickly before I get to Joe Cervenka. Producer will have the final word. Speed at times for me is irrelevant. I learned this from Faraz Zahabi. Technique at times is irrelevant until somebody is standing before you and you have to judge distance and timing. That's very dangerous. Rondo looks great technically, but can't she do it with another body in front of her? Joe, you have one last thing to say?
Well, Gareth said he would father children with Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey just scares me. We talked about Chris Weidman being a beast. Oh, I went over to Joe and I told you, showdown. I am deathly afraid of Ronda, and she would mess me up in a hurry. And I'm about 6'1", 230 pounds, so that'll tell you something.
People don't understand. People always say, oh, she's a woman, or I could punch out a featherweight, I could destroy a flyweight in Demetrius Johnson. Ladies and gentlemen, you have no idea what these mixed martial artists are capable of, their speed, their power, their technique. It is the most beautiful sport on this planet, despite the fact I'm a huge soccer fan, continuing to watch the World Cup. And as a proud Canadian, I love my hockey, but there's nothing that comes close to comparing mixed martial arts. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Thank you to the other ones that are roaming around there, and of course, Heidi Fang, who probably Gareth Davis, once he finishes a salad, we'll go speak to momentarily. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.